Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a Decoding TV mini-sode, is what I've been calling them. I know Patrick prefers Ahsoka-sode, but I think that's too confusing. Today, we're going to be discussing, we have a mini-episode discussing Ahsoka episodes 5 and 6. Episode 5, Shadow Warrior. Episode 6, Far, Far Away. Or actually, Part 5. Part 6 is what they're called canonically. Patrick Klepek, thanks for chatting. How are you doing today, man?
I'm good. Look, you know what, David, I just trust the audience to understand the nuance of Ahsoka-sode. And so we'll just put it out there. The audience can weigh in, please, in the comments at Decoding TV. Let us know, which one do you prefer?
DecodingTV.com is where you can sign up to receive free updates, but also become a paid subscriber and support the podcast. And of course, find us across all platforms at Decoding TV. Patrick, I actually wanted to mention, I posted an Instagram reel of us. talking about de-aging in Star Wars. And that Instagram reel provoked some very strong reactions from Star Wars fans.
Were they normal reactions, David?
Let's just say they weren't happy that you and I had a platform. I'm just gonna put that.
Well, look, my family agrees. You got some crossover between.
Your family also doesn't like that you have a platform. Is that right?
No. I think they would like me to be deplatformed as soon as possible. But yeah, sorry, kids.
My wife has a saying though, which is that hey, when you start getting like a lot of critical comments, the initial reaction might be, hey, that's very discouraging and upsetting that this person told me to log off forever.
Frankly, given some of the things the internet can say, that's incredibly kind, David. That's borderline respectful for the internet these days.
In fact, what it is a sign of is that, hey, the work is actually reaching outside of your normal spheres of influence. So, a lot of people saw that de-aging clip over at Instagram.com/decodingTV, where we are uploading clips, as well as on TikTok, TikTok.com/decodingTV. And yeah, the point that you made was essentially they should have recast young Luke Skywalker. They should have recast other people and allow other actors to carry on the legacy of these beloved characters. And that's a thing that I agree with. So. Anyway, we can obviously continue that conversation today in our conversation about Ahsoka Parts 5 and Part 6, Shadow Warrior and Far, Far Away. And I do want to just call out that on Decoding TV, we've got a lot of great stuff coming up for you folks. We are obviously going to be covering the final two episodes of Ahsoka in some form. And also, we got The Continental from the world of John Wick, which is streaming on Peacock, going to be coming up for you. So keep it tuned into Decoding TV. And next week, current plan is to do an episode about Gen V. It's a spin-off series of The Boys on Prime Video. And so we'll be covering that on Decoding TV as well. So a lot of great stuff coming up for you. And just want you to know what to expect right here on Decoding TV. But let's get into it, Patrick Klepek. Episode 5 and 6. All right, let's talk about Episode 5. This is a big one. This is one that a lot of people talked about. There's a lot of chatter online about.
Aired in theaters. You could go watch this episode in a movie theater if you so chose.
Indeed. So I guess a quick overall thought, and then I can read a little bit from this week recap, which I got from Wikipedia. Patrick Klepek, what did you think of episode 5?
This has been a show that is straddling a difficult line between its own legacy in animation. And part of the approach that you and I have had to the show is, hey, we don't have that history with the show. And if they're going to introduce these characters, make them integral, they're going to have to find meaningful ways to invest the audience in these characters if you don't have the legacy and history with the show. And I thought they've done a pretty decent job of that all told in the show so far for what is, I think, a very difficult task. And I don't think this episode necessarily misfires on that, but I will say given the gravity, the weight, the appearance of certain characters in this episode, it was for the first time that I kind of felt like, huh? Like, I felt like moments that I could tell as, like, the music swells, like, certain nicknames are used. I'm like, oh, I could tell that's really important and would mean a lot to me if I had 100 episodes of it baked into my brain, into my heart. And so I think Shadow Warrior does, I think it's a totally, like, acceptable job of, like, trying to set up Ahsoka for the arc of the end of this season, or at least moving her along in that arc. But there was a bit of FOMO on my part of like, oh, I bet this lands so much better if I can be at the screen going like, I know what that is, because it's not just Easter egg references. It's like meaningful referential material to emotional stakes that I just don't have emotional stakes in. And so I thought it was a fine enough episode that kind of left me on the outside in a way that I haven't felt as much in previous episodes.
Yeah, I think you said something along the lines of, you know, this is the first episode where you really felt your lack of Clone Wars knowledge.
Yeah.
Watching the show. Okay, so I think it's safe to say we're going to spoil the episode and what happens in it, and you know, if you're listening to this, you probably already know.
Yeah. It's going to be in the summary that you read.
But also if you're listening to our episode 5 discussion, you're probably already caught up.
Yeah, that's fair.
What's going on? But I'll start. You know, my feelings on this show, my feelings on Ahsoka remain largely unchanged. But I'll start by talking about some of the positive aspects about the show that I appreciate, right? And one of them is seeing an actor like Hayden Christensen return to the role of Anakin Skywalker. And my understanding is he's really come to terms with this character's role in his life, the actor's life. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many people listening to this will remember, but when the prequels came out, they were very roundly derided, right? And it's kind of like, you know, the people who watched the prequels when they were kids have now grown up and really grown to appreciate them. Like, the prequels have become memes, and they've really endured as part of Star Wars cultural legacy, and in a way that has surprised me. Certainly, when I watched the prequels for the first time, I was thinking to myself, oh, like, we're never going to hear from these movies again. They're terrible.
That's it for Star Wars.
That's it.
Like,
that's it.
It was a fun ride.
Stick a fork in it. It's done, right? And what we have seen is, like, a kind of reckoning with all that negative sentiment from years ago, you know, with people like the guy who played Jar Jar Binks, you know, mm-hmm. What's his name? Ahmed Best, and mm-hmm. kind of you know, him grappling with like all the negativity that, like, publicly grappling with all the negativity he experienced, which was, you know, despite my feelings about the prequel trilogy, completely unwarranted. No one should ever be harassed or, you know, or their life interfered with because of a role they played in a film,
right?
But for Hayden Christensen, you know, yeah, like. A lot of his acting in the prequels, one could argue, is pretty terrible. Okay, one could argue, and for him to like come back and actually, in my opinion, despite the de-aging technology, do a pretty good job in his performance in this episode.
It feels like I'm slipping back into that character. Yeah, I think that was true in Obi-Wan, which was a broadly terrible show, but I think he, like, the moments that he has in that show were excellent as well. And it just goes to show that, like, the actor was not necessarily picked wrong. It's how the actor was deployed and how the character was set up, because given some decent material, like, you can see him, like, adopting that in a way that I think something like this lets you see a little bit into, like, what does the fandom see? Like, what are, like, children, like, mm-hmm. what did they take mm-hmm. away from that character? Then allows that to be that character that was derived by you and I as, right. like, young adults watching those films, but that to become iconic to a younger generation that sees that character in a different light.
Yeah, and a good performance is a function of a lot of things. It's a function of the dialogue as well, you know? It's a function of the director and what the director instructs the actor to do and whether they do more than one take, you know, and so on. So it's also a function of that actor at that point in time. Maybe Hayden Christensen has had a long life since the prequel trilogy, and now he's a better
20
actor.
Years. We've all gotten older.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like maybe he's a better actor. Who knows? But whatever the case, I thought he did a great job. How long did he appear in Obi-Wan? Was he in it for like 10 minutes or was he in it for like
hours?
It
wasn't a ton, but it was more than a cameo, but not quite, you know, like regular like starring appearances.
Yeah. So that's great to see. There's something almost like redemptive in that. There's almost, it's like, oh, like it feels like the circle is complete. To quote, you know, it feels like, hey, like this guy is coming home to one of the roles that made him famous. And he's not someone who's like really in the popular conversation that much these days. But the fact that he came back in this, into this role, knocked it out of the park. There's something really beautiful about that, I think. So, that's something I really appreciated about this episode. Let's talk a little bit more about what actually happens in episode 5, right? So, Jason Syndulla. So Syndulla arrives on Sitos, and while investigating alongside his mother, Jason Syndulla senses that Ahsoka is in the world between worlds, revealing his own connection with the Force. In the in-between space, Anakin explains to Ahsoka that he had been watching her through the Force and deduces that her loss with Baylan's skull is partially due to her unresolved guilt over the events that drove them apart. Ahsoka loses a duel with Anakin and relives fragments of her past during the Clone Wars, during which she grows concerned that her legacy will be one of fighting. Believing Anakin's teachings includes his legacy as Darth Vader, she initially refuses him, determined to not be held back by the past, which leads to another duel, finally understanding that she wasn't involved in Anakin's downfall and that her legacy is her own choice. Ahsoka chooses to live and continue fighting. All right, let's pause here for a moment, Patrick. This is not an episode or a show, in my opinion, that is really great on subtext. I think a lot of actors just saying things that they feel,
mm-hmm.
and at the same time saying them in ways that are really obtuse is the word that comes to mind, you know, and you're supposed to like, hey, these characters are meeting each other and having all these meaningful interactions. And your reaction was, wow, I wish I knew about their history. And my reaction was, I wish I understood what they were trying to say to each other. I mean, I do understand, but I'm just saying like, it's just done in such a way where they're kind of speaking in these platitudes that makes it really hard for me to connect with. Here's a clip from the episode.
Ahsoka, within you will be everything I am. All the knowledge I possess. Just as I inherited knowledge from my master, and he from his. We're part of a legacy.
But my part of that legacy is one of death and war.
But you're more than that. Because I'm more than that.
You are more, Anakin. But more powerful and dangerous than anyone realized.
No complaints about the pacing of that dialogue for me this time. But I think just, you know, I think that works for a lot of people. That style of dialogue works for a lot of people. But for me, it kept me at, like, as with much of the show, it kind of kept me at a remove. This doesn't feel like two people who have a long history reconnecting for the first time, you know, in a long time. It feels like we're kind of just saying like we're making declarative statements, you know, towards each other. That's kind of my perception of it. But Patrick, what did you think of the personal breakthroughs that Ahsoka has during these interactions?
Ahsoka really just shoving the genocidal nature of Darth Vader right under the rug. Like you're more than all of the, I mean, granted, like that's, you can't get to, you, that, in Star Wars, you can't think about that aspect of like the mass killings and like genocides that occur in the show, because that would put too much weight on these characters for a franchise that is less interested in dealing with like the consequences of that. But I'm with you. And I think that's, you know, the reaction I saw from folks who have been invested in this series was like
rapturous.
Highest of highs. And so it's frankly something where it's very difficult for me. Like, I'm critical of it in the same way that you are, in which like, I wish these characters would just say what they're, I don't need for you to spell it out for me, but I need us to be a little closer to that line than where we're at right now, because it feels like a lot of what's happening here is the weight of these characters' relationships is communicating a lot. And that's what leaves you and I as an audience member a bit on the sidelines, because that shared history is not clear to me. I don't know what these images, I mean, like in broad strokes, you're like, oh, like Ahsoka essentially became an apprentice during a war and became
a child soldier.
And like, seems bad. But
beautifully said, Patrick.
That's what I'm here for. It's just deep biting criticism. Bad. But I know there's more there, but I the show is not giving me enough to chew on. Like, it's just sort of like, I feel like it's inference from their shared history, which is why I think so much of the audience that's reacting to this episode in particular is it's what they're bringing to it. And I think it's where it's hard to be like, is this a failing of the show? It's like, well, I think it's a failing of the show if the show's aim is to get me invested in this relationship going forward. Or is Anakin not part of this show and arc going forward? And this truly is just, hey, fan service, the episode, like we're checkboxing this to give Ahsoka this moment as we wave goodbye to like what was central to the Clone Wars show, which was the relationship between Anakin and Ahsoka. Clearly that's probably not going to be the central weight of her character like going forward, or maybe it is, but like it felt to me like, hey, this is one of those moments where we're going to hopefully craft something that is like visually entertaining to the audience, which apparently means like 900 fog machines. A dreamscape. I know it's a dreamscape.
There was a shocking moment when he says, you know, we're at this battle. And it's like, it's a different battle than the one that was earlier, even though they looked like virtually identical in the background. Anyway, I think what's clear is that Ahsoka has been dealing with the weight of her relationship with Anakin for the whole series.
Yep.
And this episode was a way for her to work it out. But I agree with you.
It comes out of nowhere if you're just coming into this show.
Yeah,
right?
I think that's right. It's a fun cameo.
Like, oh, like, you know, if you're watching Ahsoka, my guess is you know who Anakin Scott. Like, there are certain things that even if you haven't seen the animated shows, like the show can make presumptions about if you're this deep into watching like a spinoff. But I do think it's one of those things where I because I didn't have that weight, like so much of it just kind of ripples past me. And it's like a totally fine bit, but it's just the show doesn't do any work to get you there in previous episodes, other than mentioning Anakin. Like, I think Anakin is mentioned in the Ahsoka show, but there is no time spent to be like, all, you know, with the way we talked about in previous episodes, like, why is she the way she is? Why is she acting as though she is more of a Mace Windu, like a more like this kind of standoffish, emotionally dead character?
Yeah.
And if that is because she is carrying the weight of Anakin Skywalker, well, the show has done no work in the live action form to inform us. And frankly, I think something like that, a little time spent there, might have allowed us to like understand if that's part of this performance. I would have liked to have known that, because it would have given a little more insight into like, why is this character so pensive and so like, is it just her relationship with Sabine? Like, I don't know, but I could have used a little bit more of that, because by the time we get to here, it just doesn't pay off for me personally.
Yeah. How dare you make me defend the show? But I think I think it's done a little bit more work than you're letting on.
Right? All right,
but not including this episode. This episode is a lot of the work, but I don't think it's done very much. I would agree with you there. And it's not like we follow this episode up with a really deep exploration of Ahsoka's character. She's almost completely absent from the next episode.
Well, so, because Ahsoka might as well be absent from her own show. Like,
exactly.
This is Sabine. Featuring Ahsoka, which I'm fine with, because frankly I'm finding one of those characters far more interesting than the other, but it makes for an odd show as a result, because it just doesn't seem like it's fully serving. Like, if it's going to be an Ahsoka show, be an Ahsoka show, and it seems like it's sharing the stage with two characters, and one of them is like far more dynamic and interesting than the other, in my opinion.
Agreed. So Ahsoka is recovered by Syndulla's crew, and through her power, she learns that Ren is with Skoll. Syndulla is contacted by Mon Mothma, who informs her that the New Republic forces are en route to take her and Ahsoka into custody for defying the Senator's orders. As the Republic fleet detachment arrives, Ahsoka recruits a pod of Purrgil to take her and Hu Yang to Bridger and Ren, while Syndulla, Jacen, and Chopper stay behind. So that's what happens in Episode 5. A couple of other things I want to point out real quick. Purrgil, basically these gigantic space whales.
Yeah.
That can go into light speed or hyperspeed. And I really thought the scale of them was really cool. There's a nice shot where Ahsoka's standing on a ship and you see the whale in front of her and you see how massive it is.
The mouth shot. That was
pretty cool. Pretty cool stuff. But my favorite part of this episode happens in about like a 20-second scene where Syndulla first realizes that her son is able to use the Force, right? And there's this East Asian pilot who's like, hey, Syndulla, we got to get out of here. Like, the Republic, they're all pissed off about us. In that accent, by the way. And this scene occurs between Hu Yang and that pilot. I'm going to play a clip from the show.
Oh.
Jacen, good work. Chopper, stay with him.
What am I missing? What just happened?
Jacen has abilities. His father, Kanan Jarrus, was a Jedi.
Okay. We better get on it then. Lander, get everyone moving. We're going back up again.
Go ahead.
In that moment, I realized how exhausting it must be to live in the Star Wars universe.
And if you're normal, right?
If you're not a Jedi, if you have no Force powers, you just have people walking to you at all times being like, hey, so-and-so is part of the Jedi Order, and his visions tell him the blah. And he's just like, okay, fine, you know, what? Okay, let's go. All right, that doesn't change my freaking job that I have to do. Like, who gives a shit? Like, let's do, you know. So I just had a lot of sympathy for that pilot, and also other people who need to hear all this like Jedi stuff all the time in the Star Wars.
Yeah, it's a good character. That character has actually been one of the more consistent ones across like all of the Favreau center of the he's been in the Mandalorian and things like that. And I actually love the scene a little bit later after this where he has to go up and talk with the New Republic ships and invent a reason to just like delay time until the space whales can make their way off planet. There's a really, really funny exchange that reminded me a lot of like some of the opening exchanges in The Last Jedi of just sort of like goofiness, like talking with the ship. That he's just a really funny actor. And I agree. It's nice to have a moment of levity about all the shit that's in this universe. Like sometimes, like, again, you don't want to like, I don't like when fantastical shows like can't take their own fantastical elements seriously because it's like, well, they don't have the fantastic elements.
You need not worry about that in this show.
No, but that's
if there's one descriptor I would have for this show, it is self-serious.
There's a difference between like poking fun at the universe and all it has wrought and not taking itself seriously. Like a moment like that, to have a character that can kind of like for the audience be like, all right, here we go again.
Here we go again.
He's Jedi.
That's funny. Yeah, that's funny. That's funny. All right.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Part 6, Far, Far Away. Let's just dive into the recap because there's sure. a bunch of stuff here. So in the distant galaxy, the Eye of Sion arrives on Peridia, the ancient homeworld of Elzebeth's people, the Dathomiri. Pause here for a moment. I just really thought the ring coming out of hyperspace hyperspeed, like that was just that's just an awesome visual, you know? Anyway, like, yeah, that is super cool. So, cause you see a lot of ships going in and out of, is it hyperspeed? Is that what it's called? I just want to make sure I'm getting it. Is
it? Your attempt at guessing this on the spot is as good as mine. I think so though.
We have heard it probably hundreds of times.
I'm gonna look up Star Wars.
It's hyperspace. They go into hyperspace.
Hyperspace. They go into
using hyperdrives.
Yes. You nailed it.
Okay. All right. Okay. So it's really cool to see the ring of, the Eye of Sion coming out of hyperspace. That is like a really cool visual. And you see a lot of ships doing that. You don't see a lot of rings doing that. So it's cool to see that. Okay. Elsbeth, Skoll, Hati, and Ren meet the Great Mothers, who are Night Sisters allied with Thrawn. As they wait for the Grand Admiral's arrival, Skoll relates to Hati his belief that the fall of the Jedi and the rise of the Empire were part of an inevitable cycle, and his hope that the alliance with Thrawn will break the cycle. Let's pause here for a moment. So this is like one of the most interesting elements of this episode to me.
This
idea that Skoll is like, hey, you know, empires rise and fall and the rise and fall again. What I'm looking for is a new beginning. And he's implying that, hey, this we have something that I both appreciate and kind of lament is the fact that a lot of these TV series feels like it's trying to fill in the gaps or make George Lucas's work or make, you know, the live action Star Wars films make more sense, right? And so what's interesting is this guy is pointing out, hey, I don't know if you've noticed, but there's three trilogies of Star Wars films and they all basically have the same plot, right? Mm-hmm. Which is like an empire rises, it falls, it rises, it falls. He's like, what I'm looking for is some way to break the cycle. Now, we unfortunately know he's going to be unsuccessful. But there is something really interesting and potentially tragic to that idea that I was just like, oh, I wonder if this is going anywhere interesting. Patrick, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, at least it's like a rethinking of like, again, like on one hand, it's like a metatextual analysis of like Star Wars in a way that I can't tell is like, is it critical or just pointing it out? And part of that will be like, whatever unfolds here. And like, it's also hard to tell on one hand, I expect a show like this to be laying groundwork to explain the rise of the First Order. But like, how do we also explain like why Thrawn isn't like mentioned
why have we never heard of Thrawn?
I assume
at all.
That will be explained. Like somehow this will kind of happen off to the side and yet will like lay the groundwork for the rise of the First Order. Like those things can live in harmony. But it's interesting to have this character off to the side. It like makes me like even more sad that Ray Stevenson isn't here anymore because it just means like, I don't know what's going to happen to this character.
Either Skoll will be like killed or vanquished at the end of the season, or he'll be recast potentially if there's a season two. Right.
And then like all of those scenarios are a huge bummer to me.
Yeah. They're all sad. Yeah.
Because, you know, we see this in like the Marvel stuff all the time where like a villain comes in and then a villain is vanquished. And like, what has been the most successful villain in like the MCU? Loki just sticks around even if he dies. And,
also,
like,
he's good now, by the way. I don't know if you realize. Right?
That's
good
called
now.
An arc. Like, you know, like makes him understand. And so like, it's just, it's rare to have a character so like just stand out so strongly.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much of that's characterization. How much of that is just like sheer like the actor doing the, I don't know. It's a combination of things, but I find them to be, I am so fascinated by their arc on the show. And yes, at this stage of the game, knowing that we're two episodes from, like, whether it's a finale or this is just like a setup for a season two or just a lead into the movie, I don't know. He could talk in a little more specifics to like the apprentice of like, what do you mean by in the beginning? Like, you seem to have an answer to that that you just, but I just want to know, like, every time he speaks, I'm at least interested in the, because it's not a traditional like villain hero arc, or at least we don't know. Maybe it still ends up being bad, presumably, but it's just, I don't know. I'm curious what they're even up to, which is more than you can often say for a lot of villains in these types of stories.
I agree. He's the highlight of the show for me. Ray Stevenson is awesome in the show. And I think he's clearly being set up as the guy who is vanquished in season one, and Thrawn is going to be a longer arc, right?
Like, yeah.
I don't think Thrawn's going to be dead by the end of the season.
No.
I think it's going to be Skoll is possibly dead, or Hati are dead. And then Thrawn is going to be the movie or season two or whatever. So, and that's a bummer. That's a bummer. So anyway, Thrawn arrives with his flagship, the Chimera, and honors Skoll's promise by providing Ren with provisions and the latest intelligence on Bridger's whereabouts. After Ren leaves, Thrawn sends Skoll and Hati to follow her so they can kill both her and Bridger, but later admits to Elsbeth that escaping exile was his main goal. All right, let's talk about the introduction of Thrawn. Like, what did you think? I thought it was fine. I think Lars Mikkelsen, who played the character in both the animated show and on the live action show, he's great. Like, it's a great performance. But does he feel dangerous to you? I don't know. I don't know that he feels, you know, he feels like, okay, he kind of ordered the execution of Ren, you know, offhandedly, but we don't really get a sense of how dangerous he is, how menacing he is, how skilled he is yet in this episode.
No, I mean, so you're a little more familiar with like the Heir to the Empire,
yeah,
like books and the Timothy Zahn arc, but, and I, my understanding of Thrawn is a master tactician that can sense and understand how everything's going to play out.
Yeah.
And part of the reason he hates the Jedi is because of things like the Force that he just can't account for. Mm-hmm. Like, that's why, like, this tension between Thrawn and Jedi's, like, Ahsoka are, like, I can account for everything, but you motherfuckers. And, like, that's the thing that drives him up a wall. And, like, that's a really interesting tension between the two characters. But this is one of those moments where, absent, I think Mikkelsen's performance is like fantastic. Like,
yeah,
there's a little bit of, I don't know that this design fully translates to like live action.
Yeah.
Also, I wonder if like some of like, as the big as the budget is, a budget on a movie is bigger, and like this would probably look even better like on a film budget,
right,
as opposed to the TV. I don't know, but I think his performance is, you can read a lot into it why this character could be like really fascinating and interesting. But what this episode lacks is a demonstration,
right,
necessarily of why they are fascinating and interesting. And you sort of have to take it on faith, because a lot of what the show is doing is people going, Thrawn, ooh, like he's so spooky. But it's like, look, this dipshit got lost on a planet and like seems like doesn't seem to have gone very well for him here. Like, have you seen the state of his stormtroopers? Now, granted, holy hell, the design of these troopers is killer. Like,
yeah,
so like that gold guy,
there's one called Enoch, right, or Enoch, basically. Like, he is that's a super cool stormtrooper outfit design. I agree.
It gives them a look. It gives I think what the show was trying to do was like, hey, some shit's gone down while they've been on this planet. Like, you think they want to look like this? And mm-hmm. Thrawn seems irritated. And like, I'm hoping we'll get a better demonstration, like, why is Thrawn,
right, why is
not,
Thrawn
not
such
just a, you know, If you just say Admiral Thrawn, he's just an admiral. Like, he's just part of this bureaucracy in the Empire. Like,
excuse me, Grand Admiral.
Grand Admiral.
He didn't go to Grand Admiral school for 8 years for you not to call him Grand Admiral, Patrick.
And I also, like, the show does no favors in that it's like, oh, like, you're here because Ezra Bridger's, and you've been here for what? Like, it's, I think they've been separated at this point for like 8 years. Like a long time has passed in between like this disappearance. It's not, you know, Sabine, and that's spoilers for the rest of the episode. Sabine finds them pretty quickly. Like, if, like, this,
yeah, it didn't seem that difficult. Okay, so, okay, let's, I mean, speaking of things that were only okay, you know, Thrawn's reintroduction was fine. Like, it's,
yeah,
a cool look. But yeah, you're right. I completely agree with you. We don't really get a sense
there's
of why
a lot.
Dangerous.
There's a lot that I'm excited. Like, it's a good enough introduction.
Yeah,
like,
it's
the character's
enough.
Performance is excellent. That, like, I think this could be a fantastic villain if played right. Right.
Speaking of things that were good enough or possibly not that good. Surviving an ambush by bandits, Ren encounters the native Noti and follows them to their village where she reunites with Bridger. I have so many thoughts on this whole situation. Mm-hmm. Number one, mm-hmm. Sabine fighting against the bandits, that was actually legit cool. Like, yeah. I loved that. That was awesome. Where it's like different, it felt like different fighting styles being balanced, like she and different weapons and different armors. Like, she's deflecting it with her armor. At one point, she uses a lightsaber, she's using grappling hooks. Like, it was just really creative. Like, I loved that whole sequence, and it was really well done.
And it's clear demonstrations of like what she's good at and how yeah. she's adapting. Like, I think one of the like real highlights of this show all along has been the fight choreography. And
yes, totally. It's new. It feels like, oh, this is a new kind of paradigm of fighting that we haven't seen in the previous episodes. So I like that they're trying to keep it fresh.
And seeing a lightsaber that can't be combined with the Force is itself just like a novel. And I you know, I'm desperately hoping, like, please don't give her Force powers. Please don't give her Force powers. Like, she's such a more interesting character if she has to accept the like
Force
principles of the Jedi's, and but without the cheat code. You know what I mean? Like, but without like a Force push, because it just, oh, she's so interesting in that way.
Thought number two.
Mm.
They have been marooned on this desolate planet for years. But let me just, for years, as you said. Let me just say, Patrick, doesn't feel like the planet's that bad. I'm just going to, there's like
planets to be. Have you seen Darth Vader's planet? That's full of lava. Nothing good's happening there.
There's a freaking bandits. They have armor. Like, they have to have some kind of, you know, resources to make it. There seems to be moisture everywhere, so it's not like a desert. These little like Koopa, you know, little turtle shell Koopa things, they can still exist. Like, the planet seems to support life is what I'm trying to say. So it's like, okay, they're not, this is not some freaking, you know, there are places on Earth that look way worse. So it's like, so anyway, so it's like, okay, wow. You know, interesting that you felt marooned there. And then finally the reunion with Ezra, I think, this was a wet fart of a scene that basically was completely underwhelming. And then also, you know, there's this dialogue where he says, how did you get here? And she's like, let's not talk about that. It was through very evil, terrible things that I had to do to get here. And then he's like, well, I can't wait to get home. It's like, how the fuck is that going to happen? Like, why does he assume, you know, I guess he assumes that the way that she took to get here, they can take home? Question mark. But like, how would he know that? She doesn't even say what it is. Anyway.
Well, I couldn't help but think when Bridgers is asking, like, and it worked, right? Like, and I almost felt like whoever, I think Filoni wrote that episode, was just thinking of the, like, the meme of, like, Anakin and Padme being like, and it worked, right? And it worked, right? Like, all I could think of was that, was that meme. But I'm with you. Like, what was supposed to be, like, the thrust of this show has really not been Ahsoka, but has been Sabine's relationship and trauma over the disappearance of Ezra Bridgers.
Yes.
And yes, I know it's been a long time, and I can't tell if these two are brother and sister, or they want to go bang behind a shed. I can't tell like what the deal is with these two.
Sure.
But this should have been I should have felt like,
right.
I'm not expecting me to tear up because I don't have the connection with these characters, but I expected something. And I don't know if it's the way it's shot, if it's the aloofness of Bridgers, but it just didn't work for me.
Bridger does not come across as someone who has been marooned away from everything he has ever loved
for many years.
He's
cool.
He seems like he's just like a.
Seen these little sickos that I'm hanging out with?
He seems slightly happier than Patrick Klepek when we fire up this call to record a Decoding TV episode, right? Like, it's just like, how's it going? Hey, good to see you. It's like the face someone makes after you haven't seen them for like 6 months when you see them at a brunch. Like, that's what he looks. And it's just like, what are we even doing here, folks?
Yeah.
It's kind of like, this idea of, I hate to talk about the sins of the father, Patrick, but like,
please.
At the end of Force Awakens, right? Like, Rey hands Luke Skywalker the saber, and everyone's like, oh, they want, like, I can't wait for Luke to accept the saber and, like, you know, and like continue the whatever the fuck. And, you know, talking with Rian Johnson, he's like, hey, there's a reason why Luke decided to go to a desert planet and like maroon himself for like many decades or whatever. And it's not because he's really raring to get back into the Force, right? He's not just going to fire up the lightsaber and be like, let's go. And it feels like this big clash between what audiences, quote unquote, want to see, which is these two characters reunite lovingly, versus how Ezra Bridger would actually feel if he was in this situation, which apparently was terrible, even though based on the environs themselves, looks actually just fine to me.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, any closing thoughts on the episode, Patrick? Because we got to record another episode right after.
We do. I will say, this was one of my favorite episodes for like all of its problems aside. Like a lot of it ended up working for me. I loved a lot of the imagery. I liked, you know, it reminded me of some of my favorite episodes of The Mandalorian, which is like the, like it was Sabine goes to a planet. Just like it was like The Mandalorian goes to a planet. Like, what's going to be here? And it's like just meeting a bunch of weird little dudes was like, that's my favorite part of Star Wars. Like, yeah, oh, who's this weird little dude? And like, what are they up to? And how does their little, and you know, like that moment when she walks through the, like their little place, like there's all these really tiny details. Like, how does their society work? And like them, like it, all that stuff is some of my favorite stuff of when Star Wars is working best. And especially in an episodic format where they can linger in that stuff a little bit longer. So I'm in on Thrawn. I'm not really in on the Ezra and Sabine like reuniting, but I'm really excited for the last two episodes, even if it feels broadly like it does feel like we're doing a lot of plate spinning because we can't have too many things happen because the things that have to really happen have to happen in a movie. And I'll be curious to see how this season ends knowing like that end game is in sight where it's like, well, how much are we explaining in the movie? So, but I'm actually like more excited. I was more excited for the finale, the concluding arc now than I was at the end of the previous episode, which didn't work as much for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's going to wrap us up for this minisode. Just as I predicted, I think these minisodes are rapidly expanding to become almost full size episodes.
Sodes. They're just sodes now.
They're just sodes now. Anyway, we will be covering the rest of Ahsoka. We'll also be in some format or another. We'll also be covering the Continental as well as Gen V/Gen 5 in the next couple weeks. So stay tuned to podcast.decodingtv.com to get your Decoding TV fix and email us. Let us know what you think of the podcast, of Ahsoka, of everything we're discussing at decodingtv@gmail.com. Find Patrick Klepek's work at Remap Radio as well as at crossplay.news. He's Patrick Klepek. I am David Chen. We'll see you very soon. Goodbye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.